You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Nicole Bachmann. She's in Zurich at the moment. Nicole, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thanks for having me. It's great.
So let's talk about what you're working on now. And are you in your studio in Zurich now? Where are you exactly?
Yes, I'm in my studio in Zurich. Well, actually, I live between London and Zurich, so I've got a studio in London, one in Zurich. But now for the summer, I moved, and also because of Manifesta, I moved back to Zurich for the summer. And yes, I'm in my studio, and currently I'm working on a performance I already performed at Eastside Projects in Birmingham. I think you already talked with Gavin Wade once, so we did a project with him in spring. And I'm kind of reworking the performance I did there, which was called Hush Now Ha, Part 2. And it's a spoken word performance performed by an actress. I always, like if I do my, in my work, I usually work with actors and actresses because the language, like the way I write, I always write my text. But then the way I want them to be interpreted and spoken, I really need someone who can deliver that performs with the voice, because the voice is a very important tool in my work. And so tonight, actually, I'll do a performance at Cabaret Voltaire in Zurich, and it's part of the Manifesta performance events. And the act, so the text I'm working on, which you will perform tonight, is kind of an abstract narrative where language and words, it's more about the sounds and the melody and not so much about, there's not like a story which goes from A to Z, but it's more kind of like an interpretation of the voice and how meaning changes if you say a word this way or another way. Yeah.
Which is almost kind of like a concrete poetry or poetry
concrete.
Yes,
I've been thinking about that a lot. But then I think kind of the difference is that it doesn't go into sound poetry where kind of the word, you know, like how Dada, like Schwitters, the Ursonate, where you just have sounds and weird words and you can't get anything. Whereas with me, I'm much more interested in kind of using the voice and how you say words and the repetition of words to kind of create new meaning, kind of a way of knowledge production. You know, so it's not always about kind of intellectual knowledge production, but actually how you say things and the experience of hearing it. So I think that's kind of my contemporary link to kind of using words and voice in that way.
And it sounds like though I haven't heard one of your performances, these sounds, these words are not entirely abstract. They, and though they're not forming a traditional narrative, there is kind of an arc to it. It's not, as you were saying, kind of like a Dada text. It's not completely what would seem to be nonsense, right? There's a
yes,
kind
exactly.
of a theme to it? How is that form as a writer? How do you form that? Because you're working with sounds and sometimes non-words. What is the arc of it, or if we can discuss that, the narrative,
yes,
if there
course.
Is one?
Well, I always have a starting point. So for this performance, that actually was a performance in two parts, and it started because I was given a brick from the 15th century, and it had a hand imprint in it. And I was really interested to kind of, you know, having seeing this imprint, I felt like, oh, that is so direct. I almost feel like this person could live now. I don't know. It just really worked in my played on my mind, thinking how this kind of imprint of an actual hand still exists now, and how this is kind of a relationship to the past, and how we make sense and how we make things. And then actually turns out this brick was made, you know, like in the old way where you put clay in a wooden frame and then someone pushes it out. So the action of pushing it out is that kind of, that made the hand imprint, but it's also the kind of making of things. So this is, and then I'm thinking around making sense, making language, you know, construction of language, how does that work? And kind of linking the idea of making in a general sense between making of things and objects and making of language and sense. And then I kind of follow that thread through and So it's probably, yeah, I think you're right. It's not that abstract. It's more maybe associative, but then by work, you know, by working through it, obviously I refine and I go with the rhythm of the words. And then sometimes there's two, you know, the same words come one after the other, just for the rhythm and kind of to bounce back and to kind of pose question within the text, but without saying, oh, this is the question, but kind of, you know, sometimes through repetition, you create a new sense. So these are the things. And so every time,
and
every time, huh?
No, no, go on. So every time, yeah.
No, no, it was just more like that every time for each performance, there kind of is an idea I'm working around. Yeah.
And you're also directing, of course. You're directing this actor as you are this evening. I would think that's also a kind of unique approach, because I would imagine that the actors that you're working with aren't used to doing this type of thing, or are they vocally trained? I mean, I'm kind of wondering how you actually direct them, because I would think that would be challenging for an actor.
Yes, it's very challenging, and I've noticed I've worked with various actors, and I kind of found my dream actress in London. Her name is Anna Tierney, and she really, it's kind of an artistic approach, and she is really interested in kind of, you know, obviously she does, you know, normal, you know, kind of acting jobs and everything, but she's also really interested in kind of thinking about text in different ways and kind of exploring her voice and exploring text in an artistic way. So she really becomes almost, you know, it's like a partner where I explain what I want and we go through, and with her rhythm of saying things, sometimes we change the text, we adapt the text because, you know, her rhythm of voice would need a second tomorrow here, or, you know, kind of, so that really goes forth and back with her voice and me kind of directing her how I want it and to kind of just push. Actually, I just really feel like I'm really pushing her to explore all her abilities, and then we kind of draw back certain peaks where I feel that's too much or that's too little. So it's kind of like sculpting a clay with her voice, but it's beautiful because she brings so much to it as well. Yeah.
Right, special relationship between you two, really, just like between a director and an actor. Sometimes it really works because of the chemistry there as well between you two, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, definitely. I think you could say that.
And in looking at all your work, so this is for Manifesta, the one coming
yes.
up, is there other derivative works from this? I'm kind of wondering how else this enters the market. Is there videos, visual work, or other things that that you can...
Well, that I can sell.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Usually...
I don't mean, it's not that you have to sell anything, but I'm curious how it also enters the market and
So basically, usually, like, think about my performances, it's kind of it's usually an installation. So for the piece I'm showing tonight for Manifesta, I designed posters, and it's kind of like a grid or kind of like a drawing of a rock, but then it's kind of separated in squares, and in there are the voice or words. So kind of thinking about structural, you know, how language is set up. But that is quite abstract. But this is kind of a backdrop to when she's speaking. So kind of, so visually, you kind of see the thing she's doing, but not directly. So it's kind of a visual interpretation. So I always, so these posters exist, or for another performance where I was much more thinking about the materiality of things and making things, I had a woolen rug knitted with words in it, and it was really thick white wool, and the words, and it was all white, and so the words only appeared because of a different stitch. So it was kind of a relief carpet. It was about 1.5 by 2 meters the size. So I always, very often, the performances kind of come with an object, but they don't necessarily have to be performed in front of the object or next to the object, but it's kind of, you know, almost like a realm what I'm thinking about, and then these different things come out of it, and they're kind of loosely connected but could be shown separately. Yeah.
That makes sense. And they could also obviously be collected, whereas the performances themselves can't be collected. Is that the case? I mean, unlike, let's say, Tino Segal's work or some performers who do find a way of selling their work, the performances themselves, I'm saying, don't enter the market that way.
No, in that way they don't. Even though, you know, when we did the project, Now the East Side project in Birmingham, we were kind of thinking about performance to camera and what it means to document your performance, you know, and kind of to have, instead of just having a mere documentation, to kind of do it in a way so when you, you know, by the end, you'd walk off with a finished piece of work, kind of as a video. So this was, and we did that in spring in Birmingham, and I actually, from that specific performance, I've got a video, which I think actually this could work really well as a two-screen installation in a gallery as well, even though you kind of can't tell it's a performance and it's live, but still it was filmed by This Is Tomorrow, you know, the art website in London. And so it was filmed by, like, with two cameras by professional cameramen. And so it is an interesting hybrid between performance and video art, but it totally can exist within, you know, within a gallery space. So that was something I was thinking around as well in spring.
And so the manifesto is next. What else is coming up for you? Where will you go next? You're between London and Zurich. Is there other shows that you're also creating performances for?
I'm working on an application at the moment, which would be for a much bigger performance, because usually up to now my performances had a length of about 15 to 20 minutes maximum. And I'm writing an application for the fall, which would be for a performance which would be between 40 minutes and an hour, and kind of really, well, you know, have money and the funds to work with the actress for three times for a week and kind of do workshops and really develop the text and her speaking at the same time. This is quite a big project I'm working on, and I've been talking to a few people about, you know, possibly showing it if I get the funding. And yeah, so this is exciting. I'll be back in London.
That is exciting, yeah. So go on, yeah, let's talk about how something like that could come together. So London, that would possibly happen in London?
That would definitely happen in London, because I'm going to be back in London from September on. And ideally, I would do it with the same actress I worked before. So, and that would be kind of my idea. You know, like, I think the theatre world obviously has, you know, has different funding structures, but in art, it's kind of hard to kind of say, well, give me money to rehearse the actress for 2 weeks or whatever. And this is a fund, you know, or like a, how do you say, like a, not a company, how do you say, like a institution where you can ask, you know, like,
yeah, a funding institution, a non-profit,
yes,
institution. It's in the United,
exactly,
States there. It's an NGO, right? Or a,
yes,
or
something like that, where you can kind of apply for a lot of money. Like, I think the max would be $25,000. You can apply and kind of really describe your project and say what you want to do, what you get out of it. And for this fund, you don't have to say, oh, I'm going to show it in this institution or here, but you can say, this is a big step in my artistic development, and this is why I want, you know, kind of just explain what you want to do. And then obviously the idea is that you will show it, but it's not tied to a specific gallery or a specific space. So that would be amazing if I got it. So I'm really working, getting my head down and really working out the application. So yeah, that would be great.
So that's a good, I mean, subject to talk about in terms of it entering the market. For your work then, kind of like filmmakers and directors of theater, if I can say that, they have to fundraise, mm-hmm, for what they're doing. They're not going to make the money off sales of the film, most likely, unless it's, you know, Matthew Barney or something. You're going to make the sales off, it's going to be through public funding to some extent. So your work, and just correct me if I'm wrong, is entirely supported really by public and private funding. Is that,
yes,
correct?
Yes, totally. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And so in between that, are you teaching, or how else, is that how you survive as an artist, or are there other things that you're also doing?
No, well, I do, you know, once in a while, you know, I give workshops or, you know, kind of these kind of things. But I work as a photographer as well. So I earn my money as an interior photographer, or I do a lot of design stuff. So, yeah.
So that's great. So that's nice because it allows you freedom to then pursue this work, and this upcoming manifesto must be very exciting for you.
Yes, exactly. Well, actually, the manifesto has already opened in June, and I have a piece of work in the manifesto itself, like in the exhibition, which was curated by Christian Jankowski. And so that's great. That's a video piece. And then tonight is just the kind of the rolling, ongoing performance schedule they have. So it's a second thing. But yeah, no, manifesto is great. It's also great to have your work, you know, presented in an international context and kind of European-wide. So yeah, no, it's been exciting in June. It's been great.
And the video that's being shown there, what is the video?
Yes. Well, the video is, it's actually an old work of mine. And it's a video that shows five naked men. And they're sitting on a bed very close together. And it's on a loop for 13 minutes, and they don't do much. They kind of, you know, kind of shuffle a bit, and you kind of feel a bit uncomfortable. And then sometimes they look into the camera, and then they laugh a bit. And then, so basically, the idea was kind of, you know, like how, so it was thinking about posing. How do you pose? What does it mean to pose? How do you think about the spectator looking at them, you know, and they being aware of the camera and you as the audience? You know, it kind of starts where you think, like, to pretend the camera isn't there. And then suddenly you kind of realize that they, you know, maybe they're a bit embarrassed or they feel a bit uncomfortable, and then they laugh a bit, but then they don't really laugh, but they, you know, furtively look into the camera. So it's a whole kind of play between the spectator and the actors, it's just normal men. And this is also important, so it's not kind of the type of man like in Mapplethorpe, you know, like the perfect male body, but it's all normal men. One is a bit fat, one is a bit older, one has a bit of a beard, one is really long, you know. So this kind
of... And they're all completely nude, sitting on a bed,
completely
facing the
yes.
camera.
Yes.
So isn't it also about, you know, I mean, we've seen images like this with women sometimes, and there's like the, you know, the male gaze, and, you know,
mm-hmm.
a lot of works like this. Is it also about, you know, kind of the gaze upon men? You know, we don't often see that. I mean, I remember reading, you know, when I was in school, ways of seeing, right? And you know, they talked all about the gaze, and there was, you know, images of women, you know, topless women from Tahiti, Gauguin, right, holding like a plate
mm-hmm.
of fruit right near their breasts. And then the equivalent of men holding, you know, a whole bunch of oranges, you know, right near their, you know, penis, and
mm-hmm.
and the same thing. And of course it looks, you know, really odd, and we're not used to that. Is it also referencing that kind of art historical gaze?
Yes,
I mean,
definitely.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't want to read into it.
Yeah, no. Yes, definitely. I think, you know, thinking about posing kind of comes into, like, you know, what kind of pose do you take on in front of the spectator? But yes, definitely. Also, at the time, the work is from 2007, so it's, you know, kind of a few years ago. And I was interested in kind of the idea of the image of the, you know, of the male nude in art history, but also in contemporary society, or, you know, medias and stuff, pop culture, where if you saw an image of a nude man, it was usually, you know, kind of the beautiful body and kind of, but so yeah, definitely I was interested to see how would you react to seeing nude men, not beautiful, and at the same time sitting very closely together, which kind of, I mean, people find, I mean, I've had different, you know, feedbacks, you know, and some people find it extremely uncomfortable because they say, oh, it's way too intimate. I find it really aggressive, which then I think, to me, it's more kind of, as well, yes, it's intimate. Yes, it's sometimes you know, you cringe a bit and you think, oh God, oh. But at the same time, it's also funny, and it's also kind of just makes you think about, yeah, about the relationship you have them, and you know, and that, about the imagery and your position as a female or male spectator. So yes, I think this whole discourse definitely comes into it.
I love that. I like that work, and that sounds like such an exciting show to be part of now. It's great talking to you, Nicole. And in closing, is there? I've been asking people lately what books you're reading now. Is there a book or books, could be off topic, anything at all that you're currently reading?
Yes, actually, I've been reading Brian Massumi, Semblance and the Event. It's a contemporary philosopher, and it kind of talks about, you know, event theory and what it means to do a performance as an artist. But yes, it's kind of difficult. So I think it keeps me busy the whole summer, more or less, to kind of get through it and kind of just think about, you know, just think about these kind of things, what it means, the energy, and, you know, kind of, I'm interested in knowledge production, which comes not only from purely intellectual, you know, writing and thinking, but kind of different ways of producing knowledge. Yeah.
Well, thank you, and good luck with your show. And Nicole, I want to thank you for talking with me today. I really enjoyed hearing about your work, and wish you great luck with the show currently up.
Thanks very much. Yeah, I really enjoyed talking to you as well. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.